Welcome back to Daisy Dialogues. I'm Suzanne and I'm here with my sister Jackie.
Hello.
And we're joined today by a really special guest. My niece, Jordan.
Hi.
And this episode is called Mummy, Can I Come?
So we're going to cover how everyone sees it differently and the root of the problem.
I'm going to take this one to start with because Mummy, Can I Come is something that I've had personal experience with my own children. I've had personal experience as a child, and I think I have got stuff I can share. And again, it comes down to it's subjective. There's no textbooks. There's no right or wrong answer.
Great. I don't have children to have that experience with like you do, but I do have a lot of clients over the years, and when I used to facilitate the Death Cafe, people would talk about their experiences of not being able as a child to go to a death and wanting to and realizing that they missed out on that when they got a little bit older. But equally, not as frequently, I'll be honest, I've had people who have said it was traumatic. But they were coming much more from a perspective where they were not given the opportunity. They were sort of told they needed to be there.
Okay, so I have a little bit to add on to that, because obviously taking a child to a death, again, there's all sorts of yes, buts and no-bes on that. And again, also religion plays a huge impact in that, and that is not something we're qualified to have any say in. But the other side of that is children and funerals. So my personal childhood experience was somebody I loved as a grandfather. He wasn't my grandfather. He raised my mother, died when I was 13. And at 13, I felt old enough to be included in what happened next. But for whatever reason, my parents decided I wasn't, and I didn't get to go to that funeral, and I didn't get to say goodbye. And I didn't have the closure I needed. And to this day, and I'm not 13 anymore, I'm much, much older, I still would have liked to have been part of that. Especially as I've been to funerals now and I know what's involved, I would have been able to handle that at 13. And I felt deprived of that opportunity, and that's something you can't get back. So consider that when you've got children that are sort of straddling the, they're not children anymore, but they're not quite adults. You know your children. My parents thought I wasn't strong enough to handle that, but you could be, and you need to understand your child. And I'm going to bring someone into the conversation now that is sitting here patiently listening to us. Jordan, what do you have to give? What are your thoughts on all of this?
It's really interesting because I was a child through at least two of the people that you guys talk about a lot in this podcast. And obviously the last one I wasn't. And the none of them, bar one, I actually got to go to. And that was technically as I was sort of coming out of being a child. So I was in that middle gap. Over the last sort of year or so, I've had a whole different perspective of it, because I was in a family that wasn't my own, in a religion that wasn't my own. And I got to see how they had to handle it, and saw someone who was between the ages of sort of 7 to 12 really want to be a part of that. And because of how their religion is structured, wasn't allowed to be.
Oh, okay. So it's not a thing for them.
I would say it's very different depending on where it is, because you have very different ways of handling sort of that religion if you're in America, if you're sort of the other way in the world. But especially the family that I was with, because of where their family was buried and how that was done, the rule of the cemetery was that no one under the age of 13 was allowed to be present for that ceremony, and you are buried within 24 hours of death. So it's very fast. It's not like us where we have to wait 2 weeks to try and work out what the funeral is going to happen. So I saw a young kid that wasn't allowed to go to her great-grandparents' funeral, wasn't allowed to go when she was younger to someone she'd lost earlier, and she doesn't handle that very well.
Aww.
And obviously has a younger brother who doesn't compute any of this because he's so young that it's, someone died in a cartoon program. I don't really know what to do but laugh, make jokes about it. And an older person that's going through that puberty age and going through that, not process that very well. So I really don't think there's a right or wrong way to handle this. If anything, I think you handled, at least me, I can't say anything for my sibling, very well with all of this. And yeah, Mummy, Can I Come? Honestly, I think you have to be honest. The only thing you can do is be honest with your kids.
Yeah, I just want to interject there because you brought up your sibling. And one of the things that was learnt for us, well, not even for me, more for you, Jackie, in this particular scenario, was what can happen when you kind of don't factor in, not through anyone's fault of your own, but you're so busy going on with your experience and how it's affecting you. What can happen as a knock-on effect of kind of not including a child? And at what point for you that kind of registered and what happened and unfolded with your youngest, who was how old at the time?
He must have been 9. Must have been 9. And yeah, that again is a podcast on its own of the impact on a child when you don't include them and you don't deliver the news they need to hear in a way that they can pick up on at 9. It wasn't pleasant. What happened afterwards wasn't pleasant. And
do you want to tell us exactly what happened?
Basically, my dad died and we went to the home to clear out his stuff. And my youngest was in the back and didn't know what was going on because we really had shielded him from all of it. And I literally turned around and said, "Pops is dead." And what happened after that, for years after that, he just withdrew and it was really uncomfortable. And luckily he's no longer a withdrawn child. He learned a lot from that and he's come out the other side and he's a brilliant young adult. But I handled that really badly. And I did that on top of my niece having been delivered the news that her rabbit had died. Her mum said, "Fred's dead." And I went, "That's awful. I would never do that to my child." And I did.
Oh, I can see how even emotionally upset about it you are now to this day, and it's like what, 17 odd years on.
Mm.
But it was an accidental oversight. But that's what I mean by not having these bigger pictures discussions and being a little bit more open to the rest of the bigger picture, the kind of thing that can happen.
Here's a weird take. Obviously, it is globally kind of seen that children and funerals are a no-no. We can kind of agree that no matter who you talk to, most people on average are going to go, having a kid at a funeral isn't really a thing. But if we're meant to see this as natural and normal, then why do we not allow children to also process that in their own way as something that's natural and normal?
Historically, though, and to be fair, right now, I haven't gone back and read on it, but historically, they did used to be part of the family because you had much, much bigger family units that lived together, you know, the generations that lived together, and children were absolutely part of it. And I also know of stories when I went to and facilitated the Death Cafe where there was a lady that actually bought her own coffin off of the internet before she died, and it was one that you could decorate. And so she got the grandchildren involved in decorating this whole coffin for the day that she did go, like putting pretty pictures on it and painting it and really involving in that part of the process. But historically, and I'm sure in other cultures, and we haven't dived into that at this point, that does go on. But culturally here, it's evolved to a place where we haven't really done much of that.
Culturally here, I think as the Western world has progressed, we've gone into a let's shield the child, let's give them a chance to be a child. They don't need to see that until they're older because you can't avoid it when you're older.
So do we think it's more of a mentality that we've gone from how long can we live, how can we preserve ourselves forever, so we don't now talk about it as children or young adults because our mentality is we're never going to die?
Yeah, the emphasis has definitely been much more on live, 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 life, 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 life. And certainly from my experiences in hospitals versus hospices, there's an absolute switch at that point. And sometimes that can be an adjustment in itself. because hospitals is all about pro-life, and a hospice is all about support and pro-death. You know, it's when I say pro-death, I mean support the death. You know, that's where we're at with that.
So when you say one of the main reasons you're doing this is because you want to make it easier, isn't that kind of, you found the root of that issue, in a way?
What do you mean, the root of that issue?
Well, the reason it's not easy anymore, the reason why it is so hard to process a death, to grieve a death, is because we shield ourselves from it for all of our life, and then decide, oh, now we have to deal with it, but we have no concept of what this is, no memory of childhood. Like, we grow up, we know how to eat, we know how to dress, we learn that as kids. We lie, we say, oh, the dog went off to a farm. Okay, it's a nice way of putting it, but we don't get as children to process something that happens to everyone all the way around the world, but we do get taught everything else we need to actually live and process through life.
Very valid points from the youngest in the room.
Yeah, weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
What does that say? The youngest person here, and she's already noticing that, and that change and that cultural shift here in this country especially, but in the Western world really. But yeah, absolutely. It's, for me, it really is that. Let's renormalize it. Let's re-talk about it. Not to be morbid, not to be depressed. Really, I don't want to get any more depressed and have any more fear around death than I've already had and grown up with. Quite the opposite. That's the whole point. It's to normalize it so that it isn't so scary, that it is part embraced as part of life again, and maybe even celebrated as part of life again, to make those much more tragic deaths, short deaths, you know, real traumatic deaths, a little bit easier to manage and bear.
And the question, Mommy, can I come, a little bit easier to manage?
Yeah, I think it's something that really should be looked at and considered a little bit more. And maybe again, the whole fear factor coming in of shielding and should we do it and they're not ready for it. Maybe that needs to be opened up a little bit as a question.
Jordan, thank you very much for joining and sharing your experiences in our Family Fired podcast today.
It's been fun. And I'm guessing I'll have some fun with this. Check out their socials. Check out their contact information at the bottom of this podcast, wherever you're listening to it on. And all their information's at jt-accounts.co.uk. I can't wait to see where Daisy Dialogue goes. And it's been a pleasure being here.
We are going to share people's memories of and questions that they would like to put to their loved ones. So I've got one here, and it's, what did your parents do that basically screwed you up for life?
What don't parents do that can basically screw you up for life? It's a parent's role. No, it's not. That's absolute rubbish. That's quite a poignant question. And obviously they think this person is screwed up. But again, that's, you know, in the eye of the beholder.
So is this the person that's actually gone and they want to say, you know, why were you such a messed up person?
Why were you messed up?
Why were you so messed up? What did your parents do? Which begs the question on how they actually died as well, if you want to look at it like that. And there was a bit of an expletive word in there, but I didn't want to really share that one. Okay. So the other one I've got here is, what is the worst mess you've seen in a bathroom? What is the worst mess you've seen in a bathroom? This is a question they want to ask their loved one when they've died, or their friend when they've died.
Clearly.
I mean, what do they think they do? They sort of hover about and just look at everyone's bathrooms like a ghost or something. I don't really know
where that goes. That's a bit of a weird one, isn't it?